animate our collective sense of a desire for change. And Donald Trump cannot do anything about that.
Well, we're going to end it there. I want to thank you all so much for spending this day remembering Aretha Franklin. Angela Davis, author, professor, and activist at University of California, Santa Cruz. Again, that headline, Jet Magazine, going back decades. Aretha says she'll go Angela's bond if permitted, offering to pay whether it's $100,000 or $250,000 to free Angela Davis. Farah Jasmine Griffin, professor of English and comparative literature and African American studies at Columbia University. Among her books, If You Can't Be Free, Be a Mystery, In Search of Billie Holiday. And Mark Anthony Neal, Duke University professor, author of many books. And that does it for our show as we go out with respect. Democracy Now! Is a job opening for a broadcast engineer here in New York City. Find out more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Robbie Caron, Laura Gottesdiener, our Carla Wills. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Looking to return to school this fall? Well, fall registration is now open at Henry Ford College. Go online to your WebAdvisor account to register before classes start on August 23rd. If you don't have a WebAdvisor, call the HFC Counseling Office at 313-845-9611 to get started on a path that's future-driven.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
I was probably 10 years old in 1967 when I heard Aretha Franklin for the first time, when her voice blasted out of an AM radio with an insistence that I could somehow feel, but at only 10, couldn't quite completely understand. What you want, baby, I got it. What you need, you know I got it. What could she be talking about? Whatever it is, I thought, it sounds like she knows it, and it sounds like she owns it.
What you want, baby, I got it. What you need, you know I got it. All I'm asking is for a little respect when you come just home. Bit, hey, baby, just a little when bit. When you get home, just a little bit. Mister, just a little bit. I ain't gonna do you wrong while you're gone. I ain't gonna do you wrong, cause I don't wanna. All I'm asking is for a little respect when you come home. Just a little bit, baby. Just a little bit. When you get home, just a little bit. Yeah, just a little bit. I'm out to give it all my money. And all I'm asking in return, honey, is to give me my promise when you get home. Just a little bit. Yeah, just a, baby. Just a, just a, when you get home. Just a little bit. Yeah, just a little bit.
The minute that Otis heard Aretha's version of Respect, he was like, well, that's her song. He might have written it. And his arrangement, of course, was great, but there was very little that could ever touch Aretha's version of Respect.
Paul Ingalls, reflecting on the career of Aretha Franklin, born in 1942 and passing in August of 2018. We'll call this hour Some Respect for Aretha. She earned it early and often in a performing career that spanned over six decades. You'll hear today some top music writers pitch in their tributes. along with some amazing Aretha Franklin performances.
I'm Ashley Kahn. I'm a music journalist and author here in New Jersey. Well, one of the very first steps that you can trace the coming of Aretha with is, of course, when she was all of 15, 16 years old and recording for Chess Records. And they simply put up the microphones in a church where she was performing. And her version of Precious Lord has a maturity, a confidence, the interaction with the churchgoers at that service. All speaks to the amazing level that she had achieved even by the age of 15, 16 years old.
Lead me on to the light. Oh, take my hand, precious Lord, and lead your child. My way. Was a mature performer. She was someone who knew how to inhabit a song, and she was someone who knew how to get to an emotional truth that was very, very authentic, which is really what, you know, great gospel music is all about. It's about bringing this incredible authenticity, this sincerity that connects with people instantaneously. And you don't have to be, you know, a churchgoer. You don't have to be black. You don't have to be anything but human to hear that soulful quality, that deep, deep connective force that she had in her voice. at such a young age. Had she remained in the church, she would have been another Mahalia Jackson, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, someone on that level. We would have been celebrating her just as much.
Hi, my name is John Kreuth, and I've written a few books about Roy Orbison and the Beatles and Ross Unruly Kirk and Townes Van Zandt. The combination of gospel and soul, it was just so powerful. It was just, she had a message in her music. And I am not a Christian, but William Blake, Reverend Gary Davis, and Aretha Franklin certainly have taken me down that path. Amen.
I'm Rob Bowman, the Grammy Award-winning professor of music at York University in Toronto. You know, one of the more obscure to the general public Aretha performances is when she sings Mary, Don't You Weep. She does that on that 72 Amazing Grace album, the gospel record she did in L.A. with Reverend James Cleveland. Aretha takes that song and you could put it on a loop for hours and you would keep noticing nuances that make it such an extraordinary, emotional, extreme performance. I actually think it's one of her greatest performances ever. That's an example of a great Aretha song that was never on a single, never a hit record.
We're gonna review the story of two sisters. For Mary and Martha. Named Lazarus. One day while Jesus was away, that dear old brother died. Yeah, yeah.
It's the biggest selling gospel album of all time and one of the best gospel albums ever. And right in between that, Aretha's putting out secular hit after secular hit, talking about the man she loves or doesn't love or hopes to love and so on. She never left the church, and the church is always in her best secular work, always.
When, you know, Aretha, with her father's blessing, by the way, makes the decision to become a professional entertainer,
in her, you know, late teens, early 20s. She's being modeled after Nina Simone. You think about Dionne Warwick, you know, who are just establishing themselves in the early 60s. And they're kind of the proto-soul singers. And Columbia Records, to which Aretha was signed at the time, is also trying to find her proper role, her station, if you will. And one of the tunes that always does it for me, that really kind of brings to the front her ability to handle non-gospel, non-worshipful music, is a tune called Today I Sing the Blues. She obviously felt very close to this tune because she came back to it when she signed with Atlantic Records and, you know, had her soul explosion in the late 60s. And it just is one of those tunes that could be so pedestrian, but she brings it to another level.
Without a word of warning, the blues walked in this morning and circled around my lonely room. I didn't know why I had that sad and lonely feeling until my baby called and said, we're through. Sing a love song, but today I'm singing the blues. It strikes me kind of funny how love can be this way. Alone again today, and it strikes me kind of funny how fate can be unfair.
With NPR Music. David Remnick wrote in The New Yorker about Aretha Franklin's musical intelligence, and I think that is such an important part of her legacy. She was an incredibly athletic singer. She certainly dazzled us with her power and her high notes, but every high note she would hit had a reason. Every phrase she gave us had a logic to it, and that logic was the logic of emotional intimacy. Her songs, her readings of songs are the most tender and insightful stories about the way we live with each other, the way we love, essential human experiences. And it is Aretha's way of singing that provides that insight.
I don't want nobody. Sitting around
because company's all right with me every once in a while. Yes, it is. I tell you, I don't mind company, because company's all right with me every once in a while. Send me no doctor, filling me up with all of those pills. I got me a man named Dr. Feelgood. You know, yeah, that man takes care of all of my pains and my ills. His name is Dr. Feelgood.
Aretha Franklin's Dr. Feelgood. More from our program, Some Respect for Aretha, when we continue after this break. I'm Paul Ingalls. This is Some Respect for Aretha. Aretha Franklin, who was born in 1942 and passed away in August of 2018. More from our panel of music writers, including Rob Bowman, an instructor and writer from Canada, talks about those days when Jerry Wexler of Atlantic Records sat her down at the piano to record some of her most impressive sides.
And Wexler, when he signed her to Atlantic, he really wanted to take her back to the church. You gotta remember, Aretha recorded a gospel record when she was 16. So he felt if he took her into a studio, let her work up a head arrangement instead of having these pre-done charts with a big band and strings like Columbia had been doing, and most importantly, put her at the piano. Let her direct the session. He knew what kind of musician she was. You know, people often think of vocalists as somehow not musicians, and it might be true of a few of them, but the great vocalists were also great musicians, whether or not they played an instrument or not. They understood music inside out, and Aretha did, and she played. And when she played piano and led a band again, it was transformative. It would change the band, and it would certainly influence her vocals. And Wexler's move was a piece of brilliance. The way she uses her breath on the breakdowns and I've Never Loved a Man are so sensual, and I don't mean that in a crude way. I mean so sensual in terms of just experiencing it in a sensual manner.
You're no good heartbreaker. You're a liar and you're a cheat. And I don't know why I let you do these things to me. My friends keep telling me thank you.
I love you.
She is a woman, a human being who can transform and take any moment and put it on a different level. And that can only be good for anybody in any situation.
I'm Gwen Tompkins, and I am the host of Music Inside Out, a weekly public radio music program that airs from New Orleans. When Aretha Franklin came to public notice, you know, with I Never Loved a Man, that album, it really was as if, you know, a new sun had been created in the firmament. I mean, you know, this was a voice and an attitude and a perspective that was so needed in this world at this time and in this universe at this time.
You better think.
Franklin gave people a vocabulary, you know, with which to discuss what it's like to be a woman. You know, before then, the radio was a lot of love songs written by a lot of very nice writers, and also, you know, a lot of girl groups who are you know, who were singing about whether boys liked them or not, or that sort of thing. But Aretha Franklin was, she was a grown woman very early in life. And so she communicated grown-up ideas about life and, you know, I mean, trying to be a woman in a modern world. And oftentimes trying to be a woman in a world in, that didn't necessarily venerate women, at least not to the degree that, that men were venerated. And so there was something about the way that she sang and the songs that she chose to sing, to write and sing, you know, that communicated, you know, this very feminine desire, you know what I mean, to have strength and tenderness at the same time, and to experience real longing in life and real passion in life, you know what I mean, and to also, you know, experience heartbreak and existential pain.
Ain't no way for me to love you if you won't let me.
Aretha Franklin, you know, always used to use the word real. That was one of her most often used words. You know, she would describe something as being good if it were real. And I sort of interpret that to mean that there's something in the essence of whatever she's discussing or describing that is central to the human condition, you know. And I think that that really is the word that really defined her, because she was so real. There wasn't a lot of artifice in how she sang, in what she sang, and in the subjects that she sang about.
Musician and music author John Kruth.
I can think about, you know, growing up as a kid and seeing, you know, what was happening with civil rights and how Aretha's music played right into that, played into civil rights, played into women's rights, and just how powerful it all was and how beautiful it all was. And I mean, she had a voice like Ray Charles, in the sense that it's one of the lasting voices of all time. And everyone who ever tried to sing, male or female, would always go to Aretha, just the same way they went to Ray. I mean, we all learned how to sing listening to Aretha Franklin records. Though, of course, very few of us could sing like that.
If you want my loving, if you really do, don't be afraid, baby. Just ask me. You know I'm gonna give it to you.
Didn't get any better than that. Baby, I Love You, Aretha Franklin. This is Some Respect for Aretha. I'm Paul Ingalls. We'll have more after this. You're listening to Some Respect for Aretha, a retrospective of the career of Aretha Franklin, who passed away in August of 2018. I'm Paul Ingalls, and we're joined today by some great music writers and commentators, including first Gwen Tompkins of the public radio program Music Inside Out, and then Ann Powers of NPR Music.
Losing Aretha Franklin is something that sends you to bed with the covers over your head. You know, it's one of those events that logic tells you has to happen, but with every other fiber of your being, you're hoping that it never happens, because Aretha Franklin means so much to me and to, you know, millions and millions of other people who are here with us and who've passed on.
So often an artist like Aretha Franklin is remembered kind of abstractly, but I think the thing about Aretha is that we all live with her in our hearts. You know, she was a presence in our lives for so many decades and never stopped being that vivid presence. So although, of course, I mourn her loss, I'm very, very grateful that I got to live in the world next to her.
And the darkening of the street, that's where we always meet, hiding in shadow where we don't. Darkness.
music writer Ashley Kahn.
When Aretha arrived, there was this idea that there was black music and there was white music. And white music was much more about mainstream pop American music. The first kind of attack on that, if you will, you know, to kind of make everyone question whether that was the right way of looking at popular American music was, of course, Motown. And Motown did, in fact, kind of pull back a little bit on the blackness, at least at the start of the 60s. But they were kind of the Trojan horse that got into the mainstream of American popularity. And the fact that you saw the Supremes and the Temptations and Smokey Robinson and the Miracles on television, you know, doing their dance steps, etc., was a door opener. But the person who really delivered black American music to the top of the charts and created this permanent place within mainstream pop America for the sound of black America was Aretha Franklin. So she was the one who did not pull back at all on anything to do with her blackness in her sound, in the way that she delivered her music, in showing exactly who she was. And that's why she was so important to the civil rights struggle, to the tenor of the 1960s, and everything that changed after that.
This is a house that Jack built, y'all. Remember this house. This was some land that he worked by hand. It was the dream of an upright man. There was a room that was filled with love. It was a love that I was proud of. This is a life, but a life that he planned on the love, the same old love in the house that Jack built.
The house that Jack built.
Remember this house. There was a fence that held our love.
Yes, it was.
Happens in the aftermath of Aretha Franklin's passing is that her whole career is reassessed. Not just her hits, not just her groovy, arty, early 70s albums, as great as those albums are, but, you know, her 80s stuff, her connections with hip-hop in the 90s.
Aretha sometimes was given some mediocre material that, you know, one might wonder about. But even later things, Freeway of Love and Covering the Stones' Jumpin' Jack Flash. I prefer I Never Loved a Man the Way I Love You, but Aretha's take on both Freeway of Love and Jumpin' Jack Flash is still electrifying.
Aretha Franklin makes me proud to be an American. She really does. I mean, it was always about the music for me, the guitars and the cars, but the music, and particularly about soul music that was happening in the 1960s in the face of all the racism and all the violence and all the problems. The music always carried a positive message that made everybody feel good. Black, white, Hispanic, Asian, it doesn't matter. Look at all the movies and how this music has been used for years in soundtracks. This music has been an absolute gift to us, and God bless Aretha Franklin for it.
I'm so happy that Aretha Franklin was with us during the Obama administration, that she got to have this moment of true recognition when Barack Obama was president, singing at the inauguration, the Kennedy Center honors. These were crowning moments in her career and really solidified her place for a new generation.
I am so pleased to introduce world-renowned musical artist Aretha Franklin to sing My Country, 'Tis of Thee.
I think that she really delighted in stealing a scene and in re-establishing herself in the center of everyone's understanding of music.
My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I
when she appeared at the Kennedy Center Honors with the then president and also with the wonderful Carole King, who was being honored, I mean, that is one of the greatest moments of television, period. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I have watched that. I love watching that performance. And it has everything that makes Aretha so precious to us all. Her at the piano with that wonderful kind of slightly churchified air, you know.
Looking out on the morning rain, I used to feel so uninspired. So unkind, you're the king.
has her, you know, with her, you know, massive mink coat, you know what I mean? So visually, she's stunning. And then when she steps away from the piano.
When that really takes off is when Aretha throws her coat off and goes to church on that song. She takes it to church with her voice. The audience just immediately gets it and responds and takes it to another level.
It's a chilling and it's a thrilling moment. And what's just the cherry on top of the parfait is just how excited Carole King is to see Aretha in such fine form and to have Aretha, you know what I mean, sing with her. You know what I mean? Aretha singing out to the crowd and Carole King is singing to Aretha. And it's just like this incredible moment. It's just amazing.
Aretha Franklin is one of those American artists like Louis Armstrong who encapsulates not just one musical era or one style, but the whole of American popular music. Really, she is that big of a figure. And I think we have to try to grasp all of her to appreciate any of her. We have to understand Aretha's jazz, her gospel, her singer-songwriter side, her piano playing, her adventurousness when it came to working with different producers, her attitude, her sass, her connection with her sisters, all of it. So really, I think we need to have maybe a month of national mourning, maybe a year, and let that mourning turn into celebration, because Aretha Franklin deserves it more than anyone.
Thanks to Ann Powers, Gwen Tompkins, Rob Bowman, John Kruth, and Ashley Kahn for commentary for this hour. I'm Paul Ingalls. Some Respect for Aretha can be heard again at the Public Radio Exchange online at prx.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks, Aretha.
Hey, knucklehead, what are you doing?
Just throwing away this old WHFR loyal listener guy.
Well, make sure you recycle it, lame brain.
I know.
Better yet, why not save a tree and sign up for the WHFR e-newsletter instead?
WHFR has an electronic newsletter?
Yeah, you just need to go to their website, Hey, pay attention when I'm talking to you, WHFR.fm, and hit the sign-up link. It has all the same bells and whistles of the paper newsletter.
Really?
Yeah, it's the most up-to-date WHFR info sent right to your email box. You got one of those, don't you?
Yeah, I got three of them.
Ah, you wise guy, think about it.
Yeah, no more running up to the record store to get my copy and saving me on gas, too. Info sent right to my email box. That makes me very happy.
Well, okay, Mr. Happy. Let's go to WHFR.fm right now and sign you up.
Yeah, let's go do it.
It's informative, quicker, and easier on the environment. It's the WHFR electronic newsletter. Visit our website, WHFR.fm, and sign up today.
The
This is WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists.
Six to one.